It's a global phenomenon that in the last decade has reached epidemic proportions. From remote villages in the Himalayas to Eastern European cities, more and more people, especially women and girls, are falling victim to human traffickers. Often they are lured by the prospect of a well-paid job as a domestic servant, a waitress, a farm or factory worker, and they are recruited through advertisements, mail-order bride catalogues and casual acquaintances. When it comes to minors, they are often sold by unsuspecting parents who are tricked into believing their offspring are going to be looked after, learn a trade or be properly educated. Sadly, most of these girls end up being forced to work as sex slaves. All victims are physically confined, their travel and identity documents taken away, and they and their families are threatened if they don't cooperate with their traffickers. So what is being done to combat this growing phenomenon, and what are the churches doing to help? My colleague Susie Hodges picks up the story.
Many children around the world are falling victim to the prey of human traffickers. Nobody knows for sure the number of minors who end up being trafficked, but what's certain is that no country is immune from this mushrooming trade in vulnerable human beings. Poverty and unemployment are two of the key factors that fuel trafficking by creating a supply of potential victims seeking to migrate to more affluent areas of the globe. Trafficking is believed to be growing fastest in Central and Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union. Katerina Cherepaka is the coordinator in Ukraine of an international NGO called La Strada that campaigns against trafficking in minors and provides help to victims. She says whilst no firm figures are available, estimates in her own country of the number of those who are trafficked range from 500,000 upwards.
It's difficult to give you the numbers. Unfortunately, there is no common or general statistical data within the country, and I'm afraid this is similar to other countries as well, because, well, it's very difficult to count or to estimate how many those who cross the border become victims of trafficking, how many people become victims of trafficking within the country, how many of those who return, whether they're registered somewhere or not, so it's very difficult. Anyway, there are different figures that were announced. For example, according to the statistical data of the Ombudsman of Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine, there was about 500,000 to 700,000 suffered persons, trafficked persons.
It must be a difficult problem to combat, though, because it's poverty that's driving this trade, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah, the economical reason is one of the main reasons for this phenomenon. But this is actually, I would say, more often this is a kind of combination of reasons that also things that are contributing to the trafficking situation. This is both economical situation, sometimes domestic violence, lack of information. I would say the really normal wish of a person to see other countries or to visit other countries, but without being informed, being prepared, a person became very vulnerable for being trafficked. So actually this is a combination of reasons, but the economical situation is one of the most, and you know, you can find it almost in every case of trafficking.
ECPAT is a global network of organisations that campaign against child prostitution, child pornography and trafficking of children for sexual purposes. Its executive director is Carmen Madrinan, and she says all three of these phenomena are increasingly interlinked.
Well, we don't have firm statistics. I don't think there's any organization that would be able to provide you exact numbers, largely because it is an underground criminal activity, so you cannot enumerate. We do know, though, that, for example, when you look at the number of images of sexual exploitation of children, for example, in child pornography, that there are millions of images of that abuse. And what we're finding through the trafficking project is that there is a great deal of interconnectivity between crimes. For example, a child may be trafficked so that they can be sold in prostitution, and also so that images of that abuse can be documented and then sold through the internet.
Jerry Pachter says once the victims have been tricked and fall into the hands of the traffickers, their rights and freedom effectively disappear.
I would say that the cases of kidnapping is rather rare, really. And more often this is the misleading, given the false promises. And, you know, when the person comes to the country, the situation is completely different from what was promised. And they had to do, they have no rights, they have no choices to go back because the documents, money, everything is taken away. They use this as an additional threat toward the person, that you are illegal here, you will be taken to the prison. And also they threat to make some damage to the family of that person, because very often, and actually almost in all cases, they know from what family, from what city the person came.
Do they actually sometimes use physical violence to force these girls to do what they have to do?
I would say they often use the physical and violence, physical and psychological violence as an integral part of this business.
But are we making gains in the battle against the traffickers of children, who can earn huge profits from their criminal trade? Madrinan believes governments around the world almost invariably could be a lot more proactive in trying to combat this problem.
I think that states invariably can do more. It varies from country to country, region to region. What we see is that where governments are active, it can make a difference. But unfortunately, that is yet to be seen across the world. And since we're an international organization, ECPAT would probably say that not enough is being done by the state.
And when it comes to the role of the Catholic Church and other religious organizations, Cherry Pachter says they provide valuable assistance in the campaign against trafficking in the Ukraine.
We cooperate with Caritas, divisions of the Caritas. We also cooperate with organization run by Ukrainian Orthodox Church. This is a very also good cooperation because, for example, for the western part of Ukraine, the connection to the church and to the religion is more common and more widespread comparing to the south and the central part of Ukraine. And within these regions, our partners that are located in this region, they are very closely cooperate with the church. So they disseminate the information in the church. They give them the informational message to those people who visit, who comes to church. So this is also very important. We do it, and we plan to develop it and to continue this kind of cooperation.
But what would be the typical profile of an adult who is seeking to exploit a child for sexual purposes? Madrinan says often these people don't fit into any obvious category.
I think that the abusers are, the profile of the abuser is that we have certain subsets of abusers that we know about. For example, child sex tourists, people that travel from one part to another because they know that in that area they're not known and that they can engage in illicit sexual crimes without being detected. But what we do know that is very, very troubling is that that is a very small percentage of the total number of abusers, that most of the abusers are local people exploiting children for sex. And that is, I think, what's very difficult for us in any country to come to grips with.
Thailand and other countries in that area of Asia have long been associated with the plague of child prostitution. And there is a flourishing trade in foreign tourists who travel to those countries for the express purpose of having sex with minors. FACE, or FACE, is a Thai organisation that was formed to fight against child exploitation. Its director is Sudarak Seriwat, and she told me that often when tourists are on holiday, they feel anonymous, and as a result, no longer bound by the normal moral codes that would govern their behaviour at home.
You see, that is the normal mentality of any tourist from the industrialised country. When they work hard the whole year, save the money, they think that during that holiday, they can have rights to enjoy their lives, spend the money, and so on. So they do like that. That is the mentality. And also, other thing is that when they go away from their own social norm, nobody know who they are. They can be judges, in our case, some judges, university professor, Once they are in Thailand, in Cambodia, in Vietnam, they are Mr. X and Mr. Y. Nobody know who they are. Nobody know about their status, which they may not do some nasty thing in their own country because people may know. In other country, in the third world country, far away, nobody know about him. Of course, we have a program to produce a pamphlet to inform them, and we warn them that, okay, sex with children is a crime. So we quote the law to say and tell them the penalty. And this pamphlet is not targeted to them, but we target the ordinary tourists who may witness or see somebody take a child into their own room can call us saying that there is something happened next door.
So, but basically you're saying as far as the tourists are concerned, they don't really see that what they're doing is wrong.
I don't think so. I think this is a kind of sickness.
Thanks there to Susie Hodges for that report.